sate deva garavani pracharne nirvishesha shunyavadi paschat deshitane Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya
Om
agyana timirandhasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshur nilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha Nama Srishtam Maramapi Shantiputram Atrasurupam Rupam Tasyagrajam Urupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kondam Nidhirivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tam Natosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atav Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavanscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Yesterday I spoke about the culture of modern materialism by which people think they need more and more and more things, and even when they have far more things than they need to live, they're never content. It's a culture of never being content. Whereas simplicity of living is simplicity of thinking. One can actually appreciate Krishna better if one thinks, I never have enough, one is always dissatisfied. But a person who lives very simply can be satisfied by dailying, marveling at Krishna's miracles, Krishna's gifts, how Krishna so wonderfully. Srila Prabhupada often gave the example, the cow eats grass, which we can't digest, it's of no use to us, and transforms that into milk, which is such a nice food, even taste-wise, it's very nice, one can make so many products, milk, buttermilk, yogurt, butter, ghee, and this can be combined with various products in various ways. And it's very nourishing also physically, and especially important, it's nourishing for the brain, for the finer tissues that are helpful for cultivating the mode of goodness and spiritual advancement. So one can just, one who's very simple can see the hand of Krishna in every day, what we see. Actually, it's quite complex how the grass is converted into milk, is converted into ghee, is converted into brain tissue, is converted into Krishna consciousness, liquid religion, milk. Milk means cow's milk, not donkey's milk or buffalo's milk or pig's milk. Or even human milk. When Shastra speaks of milk, unless it's otherwise qualified, it means cow's milk. As I noted in this one anecdote I put in that book, The Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life, once I was on a boat crossing the very wide river Padma. I doubt if they have passenger boats going now, because a huge bridge was built, that's in Bangladesh, and it was in the rainy season, so you could hardly see the other side, the sides of the river had swollen so much, you could see the roofs of houses just sticking above the water. The whole area next to the river had flooded, and some tops of trees. And we were going on the boat, and then a rainy season, so heavy rain started, and the boat was flopping this way and that way, and it seemed like it might capsize. And in the underground, or the, what's that called, the lower cabin in which I was sitting, there was a Muslim man sitting opposite me. Of course, pretty much most of the population of Bangladesh is Muslim, but he was full core Muslim. That means he was wearing a lungi and long, what do they call that? That long kurta? Shusha, I can't remember. Sherani? Something like that. In Hindi, I don't know what they, in Bengali they just call it a jama. And a long beard like this, and he turned to his friend with his eyes sparkling. He said, "Dekho, Allah Maya." Which you can understand. Just see Allah's Maya, which means illusion, his energy, like this. So he's able to appreciate that. The combination of living relatively simply, I don't know what he did for a living, but pretty much the whole country was very simple at the time, and still is. Most people live very simply. And deep, unquestioning sense of religiosity. Another part of simplicity that you accept, you don't question. Not even in your mind, doubts don't come, because the culture is like that. Everyone around you believes in God, and it's just accepted. Just like how did that fall down? Well, it's gravity, right? Everyone knows it's because of gravity. No one questions it. Well, of course, Prabhupada questioned it, but it's just for the sake of for the sake of argument, we can say that everyone just accepts it's due to gravity that it fell down. So if everyone accepts that, as is stated in the Upanishads and in Srimad Bhagavatam, the wind blows out of fear of he, the fire burns because of wind, fear of he, the sun goes in its orbit. That's also in Brahma Sanghita. What's that? Yad chakshuresha savita sakala grahanam rajasya mastasura murtir shesha teja. Yes, yagyaya brahmati sambhrita kala chakra govindamadi purusham tamaham vajami. The sun goes in the orbit due to he. Now, if you go to school and they'll teach you the sun, I don't know what they teach you, but I can't remember what they taught me, but they certainly don't teach you that the sun is orbiting because of Govinda. They have some other explanation, which is maybe correct also from the scientific point of view, but the ultimate sarva karana karanam, the cause of all causes, is Govinda. So one can see that if one lives very simply. This is Krishna consciousness, being conscious of Krishna in everything, at every moment. Krishna's hand is there in everything. One who takes shelter of Krishna, Krishna says, "I will protect you." So a devotee sees everything that happens, it's Krishna's will. Why is Krishna making me so sick? Krishna has a reason. Why has Krishna made so many, why are there so many problems in my life? It's Krishna's will. One may think it's my previous karma resulting. Krishna is just giving me a little sample of what I deserve. I deserve much worse. And that also to teach me that I shouldn't be attached to this material world. So in this way, a devotee sees the hand of Krishna in everything. And therefore, again, simplicity. He doesn't make massive endeavors to try to change his situation Of course, we're doing that with the farm projects. We're making, it is actually a major endeavor to change the situation to one that is favorable for cultivating Krishna consciousness, as we concluded in our meeting last night. To set up simple living and high thinking communities takes a lot of thinking, and it's not at all simple to do so. It's living in a very complex society that literally legislates against simple living. The laws in most of the countries of the world, they make it very difficult to live as we wish to live according to the Vedic principles. So even if we want to, it becomes difficult. But is, and then because of the laws and all the culture around, and even ourselves, even though we may be committed to it, but we have this complex way of thinking going on in our brain, and simply to depend on Krishna seems to be very difficult. That, of course, some may call it impractical. That, of course, is especially the platform of a Paramahamsa. That in Vedic society, the Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, then Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi. And within Sannyasi, there are four levels: Kutichak, Bahudak, then what's the third one? Parivrajak, and then Hamsa or Paramahamsa. So Kutichak means, doesn't really sound like much of a sannyasi. He lives in his own village, just in a little cottage, and his family brings him food once a day. Then Bahudak means many waters, Bahu Udaka. So it means he takes from many people, but still he's in his village. And Parivrajak means he travels here and there, but still he begs from people. And Paramahamsa, like Madhavendra Puri or the Brahmana described in the 7th canto, who met Prahlad Maharaj, later described in the 11th canto to be Dattatreya. He just depends on God. He makes no endeavor to do anything. If food comes to him, he takes it. Of course, for the service of Krishna, Madhavendra Puri would make endeavor, but not for his own bodily maintenance. So that's full dependence on Krishna is the topmost platform. But that consciousness has to be imbibed in all ashrams, in all varnas, and the simply living on the land, depending on Krishna, that is conducive to developing such a consciousness. Whereas the modern materialistic consciousness, I did it. I became a success. You have to become an achiever, a success. Someone discovers some scientific law which is made by God and they put their own name on it. Or some law or principle. Darwinian evolutionary theory. Of course, that's not a law of God, that's just imagination anyway. But there are others. What are the Heisenberg uncertainty principle? Newton's laws of thermodynamics, is it? Something like that. So Newton, I don't know if Newton himself put his name on it. They should put all of them, God's laws, but they're rascals, they won't do that. So the idea, I did it, get your name, get your profile on Wikipedia. Or better still, in the Encyclopedia Britannica, get your life story. Those Wikipedia biographies, they're especially of contemporary people, they're not at all reliable because they're all written by sycophants. So you won't find it unobjective, especially of religious figures. You won't find anything objective there. So the idea of I to be an achiever on your own, and the opposite, or the godly consciousness, one certainly has to endeavor. Nahi kaschikshanamapi jatu tishtatya karmakrit. One has to work, one cannot but not work, but one has to depend on Krishna. Sarva kamani api sada. And what's the next line? Madashraya. Vyapashrita. Kurvano madvyapashraya. You do all your work depending on me. So man proposes and God disposes. You work but you don't. Kamanya vadikaraste ma paleshu karachana. Ma bhuta karma. Oh, Krishna. Ma karma falahetu bur. Huh? Mate sangostra karmane. Better train up these Gurukul kids while their brain is young. I think my brain's rotting away. His memory is very poor. So, yeah, everyone has a right to work, but we shouldn't be attached to the results. The result is given by Krishna. That understanding is there. So one can see Krishna, it's a very simple thing to do. But those who are not simple, they invent all kinds of theories like Big Bang theories and Darwinian evolutionary theories and this and that. And they avoid Krishna and they see themselves as the doer. And it becomes the culture. Culture means it propagates generation after generation. So you have a newborn child and you look at your child and say, I want to make this child a doctor or an engineer or something like this. Now, there's this propaganda against the caste system that your child of a potter, the son of a potter has to become a potter, and the daughter of a potter has to become the wife of a potter, and so on. You say the child doesn't have any choice. But what about in India today, even the child is born and you have to, immediately you have to be a doctor. You have to be an engineer. The parents choose. The child doesn't choose. Even we meet so many students that say, I don't want to do this. No, you have to. Forced by the parents. If they're against arranged marriages, they should be against parents forcing them. No, but it's good for them, they think. Build up the economy, develop the nation, and so on, with more and more doctors and engineers and so on. And there's the... why do parents do that? Because they're indoctrinated to think that without modern education and without earning plenty of money, their life is unsuccessful, unfortunate. They have not done their duty to their child unless they give them a good education, which Srila Prabhupada analyzed as being slaughterhouse education, because it kills the spiritual propensities. It makes one a cog in someone else's machine, in which you're just turning and turning and turning, and someone else is making the money. They give you a little so you can have the illusion that you're a success. And you can eat, so you can go on working. As Sri Giridhari Prabhu told me, in his job before he joined, and I believe this is quite common in IT. He wasn't in IT, he was in quality control for some mechanical engineering or something. So his boss told him that you can just stay here at work. You don't have to go home. See, when you're tired, you can sleep and we'll bring you food. And the rest of the time, you work. And his boss couldn't understand why he didn't want to do that. eat, work, sleep, minimal time, work. Maybe they must have a shower also, I guess. And just no idea that you're working so that you can live, but otherwise it's just living. Life means work. That's all. It's complete absorption, as we're aiming for in Krishna consciousness. So the idea is that the child, they're hopeless. Without getting modern education, they can't do anything. They have no future. As Bharat Prabhu pointed out, Muslims mostly send their boys to the madrasas. They don't get a modern education. But you'll find all the cell phone repair, auto repair, they're mostly all Muslims doing it. They don't need it. They're smarter than the so-called smart, educated Hindus who go through all this long process of education, start life with a huge debt to pay, and then even then they earn less than the man who's repairing autos, who his only education is Allahu Akbar. And that's all. But there's this idea that you can't get by in the world, you can't survive unless you go through this rat race. You have to ascend, go up on the ladder by education, get a position. And the parents always think, my child should do better than I have done. So they push them like this, and many of the children, they get pushed right over the balcony from the 12th floor. They commit suicide, so many of them. This Kota, where they have the coaching for entry into IIT, it must be the suicide capital of India, because they push, and so many of them, they just can't take it. Someone told me recently, they met some, someone in Kota, they're going through all this, I don't want to do this, I don't want to be a doctor. So just push. So, there are literally millions of people in the world who are, in one sense, very intelligent. You have to be very intelligent to write computer programs and hack. We were talking yesterday about hybrid war. So there's the regular conventional war with bullets and drones and bombs, and there's psychological and warfare by propaganda. But another major part of that is cyber warfare, in which you attack the computer systems of your enemy. It's reported that one American aircraft carrier, that's the most prestigious thing in the Navy, very prestigious aircraft carrier, came in, was it the Black Sea? So that's right bordering Russia. And one Russian plane came above it. One plane. And they had some system, to nullify or jam all the computer systems. So the aircraft carrier just became inoperative. And then the plane did a dozen times it buzzed the aircraft carrier, and then they got some other ship to tow it away. Because the Russians worked out that militarily it's a tough job to keep up with the Americans, but if you can wipe them out at the computer, at the cyber level, your job is done, because everything's computerized. So it requires a lot of intelligence to do that. But the intelligence to see that I'm wasting my life. Most people don't have that. But people who have that, they also can't find the way to get out of it. Although there are an increasing number of people in the Western world also. And in India also, some people are there. We know in Karumandarai, isn't it? There's some people who, from the educated background, who are just cutting out and going to the land and growing their own food. I read something about this recently. In America, it's becoming quite a phenomenon that people get all these big degrees and then they look around them and say, okay, let's get out of the city. And they see that my life is ahead of me. What am I going to do? Am I going to be in the city, these hellish cities? Really, really, the cities in the West are really hellish. Maybe less so in Australia, where still people are somewhat decent. Actually, pretty much everywhere people are fairly decent, but then there are so many people who are psychotic. You can't walk the street at night because you, or even in the daytime, because you can be attacked and killed. And the people who are psychotic, they may be most of the time fairly normal and decent people, but they're just so overstressed, they may just go crazy and kill you. And of course in the cities, the major problem is gangs, who make lots of money by selling drugs, illegal drugs, and that's a very dangerous phenomenon. So, and people are—they're not happy at all. Every time I come into Bangalore, just generally, when I come to Bangalore, I drive in from Salem, and we reach Bangalore about 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, when people are just going to work. And you can see on people on the buses, and you can see on the faces of the people the same look as in the Western cities. Even before they go to work in the morning, they look completely drained and depressed. And at the end of the day, they look more so. It's like there's just they just get enough energy to work by drinking some strong coffee, and then they go to work. It's just a completely miserable. But they may be very intelligent, but they're locked into something which makes them miserable. So we're offering an alternative, but it requires a change of mindset to be satisfied with simple food. That may mean you eat pretty much the same thing every day of the year, except on feast days they may be. Otherwise, very simple food. Very simple lifestyle. It requires a simple mentality, which, speaking about this again and again, because our mentality has become very complex by the conditioning that we get. Starting within the womb, and continuing from the moment we're born, that you, money, job, prestige, success, buy so many things, live comfortably, you have to live in a prestigious area, and so on. And then people, because they always think they need more and more and more, they're always dissatisfied. They have a feeling of incompleteness. They say, be all that you can be, but there's always more to do. I didn't do enough. I didn't. And then my classmate at school, he goes on to be a much bigger person in society than myself, even though we were on the same level in school, and a feeling of discontent. And the one who goes up, he looks down on the others. But they're both equally miserable, just in different ways. So the modes of material nature work on us in this way. And it definitely affects our Krishna consciousness, this whole mentality of what, of being part of this demoniac society. That's why I'm so much against, within our movement, encouraging people to be part of this demoniac society. If we could tell them, look, if you can't make it to the farm or whatever, okay, stay in the city. You said, but you should understand that this is a nonsense, rascal, demoniac civilization. Don't think that it's all very good and they're welfare workers. They're doing great work for people by opening hospitals and feeding people so they can go to school and get a good job. This is supporting the enemy. Of course, we don't say that the non-devotees are enemies, but the propaganda they're making is inimical to the consciousness that is required to be Krishna conscious. If we think that this material world in any way, what to speak of this modern demoniac civilization, we should understand very clearly it's a demoniac civilization. It fits. You read the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it fits the description. So if we think that it's good and nice and to be respectable in that society is something desirable, then we're in Maya. Of course, one can be respectable, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur was respectable, for the sake of establishing Krishna consciousness. But if we think inherently there's something valuable, something good, just like in Britain, for instance, people think, oh, Winston Churchill was a great man. So if I think, oh, I'm from Britain, Winston Churchill was a great man, or in India, they instill in the school, maybe not under the BJP government, but they promote Nehru was a great man. If we think, even if he wasn't I don't know if I should say this, it's being recorded, but practically a traitor by allowing the country to be divided, and even if he wasn't a womanizer, even if he'd been a decent person, which is practically impossible if you're going to be a politician, but how can we give respect when he's not Krishna conscious? We, of course, in a worldly sense, we may give respect, just like we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Nawab, who is a Muslim ruler, cow killer. Sanatana Goswami and the brahmanas with him gave respect. In a worldly sense, we may do so, but intrinsically, if we think that these people are good and they're doing great work, Dalai Lama has done great work for the people of Tibet. It's in a book by an ISKCON guru. What's wrong? We didn't get the philosophy right. We didn't understand what's in Prabhupada's books. We're saying something different. We're getting different message to that of Prabhupada, which is the message of Gita, which is the message of Krishna. So going to the land, it is, and living simply, thinking highly of Krishna, it is a revolution. But we have to take the revolution the whole way. Why are we doing this? It's not so we can show some ecological way in which people can live more or less in modern life, but more in ecological harmony. That's another bogus thing, all this ecological stuff. You live Krishna consciously automatically. Your environment, you won't pollute it and destroy it. This whole idea, oh, it's a very great thing to protect the environment, ecology. Well, the root cause of it is the exploitive spirit, which comes from lack of Krishna consciousness, non-Krishna consciousness. And the idea, we'll make the earth into the Garden of Eden so that we can all live happily, forgetting Krishna. It's all this whole ecology movement came out of the hippies of the 1960s, whose philosophy was make love, not war. Don't send the boys to Vietnam, let them stay and we'll all live peacefully and have sense gratification. So it may sound, peace, we don't want war, we want peace. What do they want peace for? So that they can have sense gratification. So it's another misleading thing. There's, oh, it's very good, the green movement. So what's good about it? Stop polluting the earth so we can all live happily forgetting Krishna. That's another bogus thing. We can also preach like that though, because people are injured. But we should say that yes, if you're Krishna conscious, then automatically you'll the environment, all that, because we're not going to make big nasty factories and slaughterhouses which pollute the air. So automatically, it comes automatically. But without Krishna consciousness, you can have green movement, save the whale, and so many things. But because the exploitive spirit is there, it will go on. All the pollution and everything, and all these big companies like BP, they deliberately break all the rules and go on with their pollution because they save so much money, and time to time they get fined $1 billion or something, which is only 0.5% of the profits they made by not following the law. So it's all scripted into their profit and profit and deficit account. It's all that, okay, we know at some point they're going to come in and they're going to make a case and fine us, and they're going to fine us $1 billion. So it's all part of the plan. And they'll go on with massive pollution and this and that. Because they don't care, because they're not Krishna conscious. They think that to pull the oil out of the earth and pollute, they don't care, because they think the goal of life is gross sense gratification. But living simply, if we're living simply, then there's no question of environmental destruction. In fact, those who live in this way, then automatically they want to maintain the ecosphere in balance, because they see directly we have to grow the food. We say we grow the food, that's how it's said in English. But actually it's not, we don't grow the food. Krishna grows the food via Mother Nature. So we know we have to keep things in balance. And even in the Vedic culture, that idea is there. If some birds come and take something from your crops, they can take. They're also God's creatures. God didn't make the food all for us. There are other living beings also. They should also be maintained. That idea is there. So this consciousness, I need to get more, I'm not satisfied. It definitely affects our Krishna consciousness. Our minds are very complex, and they work. Because they're very complex, then that's one reason why the mind just wanders here and there, because there's so many topics in there. Bahu shaka hi anantascha. So even when we try to chant, for instance, then our mind goes, it's just accustomed to going here and there with so many different, because we have so many things in our mind, and all these different things in our mind, they mix up in the mind in a, what should we say, a geometric way, the combinations. If you have one thing in them, then it's just one. If you have nine things, then it can combine in, how does that go? That 81 ways more. 84, yeah, I did this in statistics. There's something C, I can't remember at all. But yeah, you can, there's that story of the chessboard that you put one grain on the first, two on the second. So you can combine in, if you have 100 objects and you combine 1, 2, 3 up to 99, then 1, 3, 2 up to 100, 1, 3, 2, 4. It's practically unlimited, the different ways of combination. Practically, even for 100, it becomes a very big number. And what to speak, we have so many things in our minds, and it comes in dreams. You get all kind of strange dreams. Oh, I had a nice dream. Anyway, I won't talk about that now. Doing kirtan. Yeah, that's why if we had do lots of kirtan, live on the farm, what are we going to dream about? We're not going to dream about some. Well, just this morning I was taking breakfast, and then the newspaper is put, and there I am looking at some photo of some woman's breasts. What are you going to dream about? Well, we hope not that. But so many impressions come in the mind. If day after day, kirtan, discussing about Krishna, that's going to come in the mind. But we have so much garbage and clutter in our minds, then how can we think of Krishna? So this simple living, it's a simple thinking. It's a whole reprogramming, a immersion program. Just go there and be there, and be content just to be there. You don't have to go here, there, somewhere else. You just be there and chant Hare Krishna. Of course, thanks to the British, it's now easy to go to different holy places. Previously, if someone was going to visit the Char Dham, whether you take it as Badrinath, Rameshwaram, Puri and Dwarka, or whether you take it as Badrinath, Kedrinath, Yamunotri and Gangotri, it's difficult to go. Well, still it is to the last one. But nowadays, by train, it's relatively easy. And it's a very common thing in India and among our devotees also that they go to holy places. But previously, it wasn't like that. And you'll find people, many saintly people, they just stayed in one place. Saintly people, other people, all people. Most people just stayed in one place all their life. And they did. That's another feature of modern life. You're in one place for 3 years and then your company moves. If you're a government officer, you get moved every 3 years from one place. They don't keep you in one spot so you can't become too corrupt. People are always moving. It's a very mobile society. But just to be content and not even think of going somewhere else. Maybe you'll go on a pilgrimage, just like people say if they lived in Salem, they might go on a pilgrimage, maybe once a year at the most, to Tirupati. That would be by walking. Pilgrimage means by walking. It would take them several days to walk and several days to come back. So they'd go in a season where the agriculture is off, or they'd do it when they're older, vanaprastha. They have their children are grown up, they may go for a pilgrimage life. But just to be content. You don't have to go here and there. You don't have to be a great world preacher, or you don't have to do this and that and something else. You can just be happy to every day wake up in the morning, chant Hare Krishna, do a little work, in the evening also, come together with devotees, and just be satisfied to chant Hare Krishna is very rare, because we have so much dissatisfaction in our minds. Are so complicated. There's so many desires. Want to go here, do this, do that. Of course, I myself live peripatetic lifestyle, which means parivraja. Parivraja. Parivrajan, which means always traveling. So always travel. Not every parivrajak is a parivrajaka acharya. You could be a traveling salesman also. So just to travel doesn't make you a sannyasi. But I within the Varnashram system, I have a different role. I'm supposed to do that, to travel here and there. And one of the things is I have to tell is be where you are. Be satisfied with what you have. Of course, it may be that some change is there. Just like parents, or they're not parents, it's not that it's just be exactly as you are. That means you don't get your children married. Because they're not married, so why should I get certain things? The children get married, then they themselves have to have children, like this. But basically, to be satisfied in living the way that everyone here, their forefathers, a short time ago, everyone lived like this. And they didn't think that I have to go here, there, everywhere. They didn't think like that. There was no opportunity to do so anyway. And it was conducive for spiritual life. Why is the culture going down? Well, there are various reasons for that. The whole way of lifestyle, the whole attitude has changed. By nature, we are Satyadananda, we are pleasure seeking, and we are programmed to seek pleasure in objects and in doing things. Just like there's so many activities which have been invented to get the adrenaline moving, so that you get a buzz from doing. Just like bungee jumping could be a good source of income if you have a bungee jump at your farm off the side of the hill, something like that. No, not a good idea. Don't do that. You know that is? They put a chain on your ankle on a very, very high, maybe, I don't know, 100 meters high, and then you jump. Then you fall down, and the chain stops you from being killed. And then you just like that, suspended upside down a few feet above the ground. I saw it once at Rathiatra in London. We were going over Battersea Bridge over the River Thames, and they had a crane or something like this, and just as we were going over, someone jumped, and it was just over the River Thames. I guess the idea was that if the chain breaks, that he'd fall in the river instead of on the ground. But if he had the chain, that chain would drag him down. Anyway, I don't know. So, all racing cars, motorbikes, very popular in modern India, the young men. The noise, just the noise gives them a buzz. Makes them feel like I'm a buffalo or something. Maybe not a buffalo. Buffalo's not so sexy. Maybe a wild pig, something like making a big noise, and then go very fast. And these are the kind of things we take pleasure in. But if you don't have the idea to be happy like that, then you can be happy chanting Hare Krishna. And believe it or not, folks, chanting Hare Krishna is blissful. It's not, oh, I have to get up. Oh, if I don't get up, they won't give me breakfast. What do I choose? Oh, okay, I'll get up. It's not like that. Chanting is blissful. But we can't appreciate that bliss unless we are, as long as we're trying to be happy in other ways. Bishoya charya shiroshe mojiya mukhe bolo. If we have desires to be happy in any other way, then that will distract us from the actual happiness of the soul, which comes from chanting Hare Krishna and serving Krishna. And I just gave some gross example of the bungee jump and the motorbike. But the modern society has invented unlimited ways to distract our attention with the idea that we will be happy. And it's all stuck in our minds. So, going to the village, it may be something like this. They have this panchakarma, in which they have treatment just to take all the impurities out of the body which are accumulated. So similarly, cheto darpana marjanam, all the garbage which is accumulated in our consciousness has to be cleaned out. It may take some time, but definitely if we're in an environment which is conducive for that, it will be it's likely going to be more effective. This is a good example actually. Just like if you're living in a polluted city, breathing polluted air, drinking polluted water, and then you try to do what do they call that? Detox. It's a common word in the Western world. Some detox. You do some process and it's supposed to detoxify your body. But at the same time, you're always breathing in toxins. Then how are you going to become detoxified? It's not going to be... So in the same way, if we're living in this demoniac, materialistic society, and we're trying to become purified, But at the same time, we're being bombarded with all kinds of propaganda. Just like I gave that example just now. It's a bit gross, but it's very ordinary. Just the newspaper. I didn't want to see it, but just the newspaper was there, and there's some photo of some woman who's the upper part of her breast is exposed in the photo in the newspaper. So I didn't want to see that, but that's the kind of thing all the time, all around us. So it becomes more difficult to become purified. Of course, on the farms, there are men and women and boys and girls. But it's the attitude of enjoyer. That should not, the whole attitude should be different. Not that men are to enjoy women, women are to enjoy men. And also, many precautions have to be taken that enjoying spirit doesn't arise due to the mixing of men and women. But it's possible to do that in the farm community. It's possible to do it to some extent in the city temples, not in the city life in general. In the city town, just like here, we have men on one side, women on the other side. If you go to the Western countries in our ISKCON temples, sometimes it's not like that. Last year, was it? Last year or the year before, somewhere in California, I went in an ISKCON temple to give a class, and all the people came in, and it was in the Silicon Valley, where there's a lot of South Indians from cultured families, and they all came in, and they were all sitting all mixed up. And I said to them, "You wouldn't do it, you all come from India, right?" "Yes." "You wouldn't do this in India?" "No." And then I could suggest to them, because in America you can't tell people to do anything unless you're paying them or unless you're a policeman or something. So I just can suggest to you that the women go on one side and the men on the other side. And a little reluctance, and then they did it. And I heard later on, "I'm not welcome to go back to that center because I offended them by asking the men and women to be separate." So even in our temples in the Western world, this infection that men, women, all mixed up, all the same. At least on our farms, we can live as we know we need to live, in a manner that is conducive for being Krishna conscious. And if there's any sexual impropriety, which quite like we, all precautions against that. But if it does happen, and it's not impossible because the world is the way it is, then those who are against this will jump on it like anything and make a big thing about it and say, "It doesn't work." They'll hypocrisy. So we're up against formidable forces. How to live simply and chant Hare Krishna. It should be the easiest thing in the world, but because of our own conditioning and because of the whole ethos of modern society, which is against it, even the present government is supposed to be pro-Hindu, but they haven't got a clue about the purpose of life or about Vedic culture, some vague ideas. Even they want to sponsor Gurukuls. But the whole idea, what is the purpose of Gurukul? Atato Brahma Jignyasa, Vairagya Vidya. They don't like these things. They'll be against it as much as any other people. If we say that we want to have the population living very simply, majority of the population living very simply and cultivating self-realization, they're fully indoctrinated and are indoctrinating others that the goal of life is to make money, have big factories. In this way, Narendra Modi is more a follower of Nehru. Nehru was the father of modern India's industrialization. So he's following that also. So we, as we discussed yesterday, we need to make a lot of propaganda against this, just to people look at it and they immediately think, wrong, this is wrong. You're a young man, you're a young woman, you're educated, why are you living like this? It's a disservice to the nation. You got education, you should be working to build the nation. You're training your children just to be farmers. This is you're misusing your position as an Indian citizen. You're working against the national interest. You say very heavy things, as if you're a traitor to the nation. Now the nation has become like God. You salute the flag, and if you don't sing Jai Hind, or then you're considered a traitor. They treat the nation as something sacred. It would be considered one of the worst possible offenses to, for instance, urinate on the national flag, or to stamp on it, or rip it up. It would be considered. So they made the idea of the nation. Everyone has to work together to build the nation, which means that a few people at the top get more and more rich, and everyone else is brainwashed into working hard to make those few people more and more rich. And they get a few little toys like a car so they can drive to work to make them think, yes, it's so great to be a modern Indian. I can drive to work. Instead of being stuck in the bus in the traffic jam, I'm stuck in my own car, which I still have to pay 6 lakhs. I have to drive to work every day to pay off the debt for my car so that I can drive to work. And by the time I've paid off the debt, the car will already be complete junk and I'll have to get another one. So we should preach like this also. People, they haven't heard this. I think in India, no one's talking like this. If you say it in the West, people understand. Here in India, they don't understand. In a sense, it's more difficult here. I had that experience, it must be 10, 12 years ago now. In London at the Rath Yatra, I was on the questions and answers booth. So unsurprisingly, in London, if you're doing that in India, you might find people coming and respectfully asking questions. But if anyone sets themselves up to be an authority on something, the normal thing in England is people will come and challenge just to show that they know better than you. So I had all these people putting all these challenging questions one after another. And eventually I got fed up and I just started shouting at them practically. Like, you all think you're very intelligent, but you don't know anything. You're simply brainwashed by the modern society. So you have no idea of what is spiritual life. Simply you're born, you go to school, they make you into some idiotic slave of the system. I went on for about 5 minutes. I think it may be on my website, I don't know. And is it, that talk I gave? It was recorded. Yeah, yeah. And then I went on for a few minutes and then I stopped and everyone was quiet. And someone said, he's right. So it is actually a very good time for preaching in the West as well as in India. But we have to show it. There's some propaganda in the West that, okay, Prabhupada said Varnashram, but our movement's in a mess. We need to get the standard preaching together. And we can think about farms later and Varnashram later. But I disagree with that because we have to show, after 50 years, if we're just talking about simple living and high thinking, we don't have anything to show, then people will say, well, what are you doing? You're just bluffing. You're just talking about it. You don't have anything to show. We should have something to show. And the very same reason that Prabhupada started to stress this more and more in his... Well, there are several reasons we can analyze why Srila Prabhupada started to stress about Varnashram and farms in the last few years of his presence in this world, from about 1974 onwards. One reason, he saw that people are becoming his disciples, then falling away because various reasons. One reason, they're in this big ocean of material desire. So create a situation in which people can live among devotees, live peacefully, live simply, and show people how we can live in the world in a way that we can be happy at an inner level, not this false happiness, and spiritually elevated. I mean, even in the West, people will definitely notice if there's a community of people who don't eat meat, they don't drink, they don't go to discos, they cooperate with each other, they have a higher purpose in life. People are going to notice that these are very special people. Okay, I think I'll finish there. There's much more to be said. And like I say, I've said it all before, but it should be said again and again and again. And especially in our farm communities, when people, now people are starting to come, our own devotees, but it should gradually be that others start to come also. And we preach to them. We can make a little booklet, why I left the city, or something like that. Why are you, what's your name, Girdhar or something? Dhiraj Girdhar. Why did he become Nartak Gauranga Das? Dhiraj Girdhar, who had a good income. How much were you earning? He was earning 1 lakh a month, and then he went to a place where there's no running water, no electricity. He voluntarily went there. Not only he volunteered, but he made a facility for others also to do so. What's going on? Subversive activity. Subversive means it's against the system. So explain. There are better things in life. It's better. What could be better than for a person who's, what was your father doing, grandfather? Your father was a teacher. Where? In Haridwar? In Haryana somewhere. So how his father was a teacher in a polytechnic in Haryana, and his son came up and went ahead and excelled. But there's something better. Much better. So much better that you can change the whole course of your life. You did it. You fulfill your father's dream. You had a good job in a city earning 1 lakh a month and said, no, there's something much better to do. This is it. What is that? No electricity, no water, no road, no car. And chant Hare Krishna. This is it. This is best. Yeah, we should have articles in Bhagavad Darshan. Make books, make propaganda. You're running away, you're escaping. Yeah, definitely. Whew, found a way out of this hell. You can also escape. Yeah, you're going to ask something? At Simhachalam in Germany.
In Germany.
Yeah.
So you were there for a seminar where they explained how the daily society works, functions, economically. Mm. After the seminar, we asked, whatever you explained sounds very good, very nice, but we are the best, just completely different from what you are explaining. So we don't find.
What we're explaining is completely different from what's in the West. Yes, we know that. That's why we want to do it. We want to be completely different. And it is possible. If you have faith in Krishna and Prabhupada, it's possible. It's completely different. Yeah, when Prabhupada went to the West and asked people to chant Hare Krishna, shave their head and wear dhotis and saris and eat with their hands sitting on the floor. Most of our devotees in the West don't do this. I think maybe in India they don't do it either. So yeah, it's completely different. It's a fact. Who would accept it? It was a waste of time. Bhaktivedanta Swami going to the West. Who's going to accept it? It's ridiculous to even think that anyone would accept it. But they did. Why did they? Because it's better. Those who are intelligent enough could understand that it's better. So yeah, the whole way of life that we're talking about adopting, it's completely different to the West. Great. Should be completely different, because the Western culture is completely off. It's completely soul-killing. So we need something completely different. If you think it can't be done, then you remain in your half-cooked way of life, trying to be a Westerner and a devotee at the same time. It's possible by the grace of Prabhupada and Krishna. Not impossible. In many ways, people in India are in more materialistic Western consciousness than people in the West. They're still dreaming of being happy. Whereas in the West, I don't think that many people even think of actually being happy. They're just living like animals. They don't even have any aspiration to be happy. They just live their life, and if they can get some food and some sex and some drugs, and they go on like that. They prefer not to think, just like animals. But I don't think they have any aspirations to be actually happy. I don't think anyone even thinks of that. It's more like survival. That's what I think. I'm asking Bharat again and again, because he's been living in the West. But you're a bit different. You're not a complete Aussie, are you? You did mix with them, but not in the same way. They wouldn't relate to you as they would to their fellow Aussies. But if we, by distributing Prabhupada's books and speaking the philosophy of Krishna consciousness as it is, then automatically in people's hearts the disaffection for materialistic lifestyle will arise. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janyatyashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayada Haituka. Automatically, if one's actually practicing Krishna consciousness, then automatically one becomes uninterested in lesser things. The same thing as Rasavajang Rasopyasya Parangrishva Nivartate. That should happen. If it's not happening, then we're not practicing Krishna consciousness properly. So Hare Krishna, we'll finish now.